Remember Cloud Kids microphone? And let's start. Jesus, you paid it all. Help us remember that, that our soul is peace. To wait with patience. The day when so much that is now mysterious will be right upon us. When a baby is first born, she is still very much a child of the womb, still most comfortable in a warm, swaddled, swaying environment, still preferring the dark that she's adapted to, because it's all she's ever known, to this newly bright and wide and wonderful and painful and scary world. At first, she keeps her eyes shut against the light almost all the time. And it's only gradually that she learns to look around, to open her eyes and focus on what's around her. If it takes her a while, weeks or months, to learn to look around and focus, it takes much, much longer, years, decades, to learn to see. Not just look at what's around her, but to really make sense of the world around her. And that's not a process that she can do well alone, no matter how old she gets. She needs help from older, wiser sets of eyes to really figure out how to see the world, to make sense of it. Seeing is learned behavior. She needs teachers. Jesus and his first followers repeatedly describe becoming a Christian as a new birth, as being born out of the comforting but confining womb of selfishness, which I am the only person I'm aware of, and into a newly bright and wide and wonderful and painful and scary world that's populated by all sorts of other people who are just as important. And when I am first born anew, I am still very much a child of the womb. I still prefer the dark that I've been adapting to my entire life to the light. I at first spend most of my time with my eyes willfully shut, closed to my own sin and the suffering of those around me. It's only gradually that I learn to look around. It takes me a while as a child of God to learn to look around at this newly wide world. It takes me much longer to learn to see, to really make sense of this universe that is charged with the grandeur of God, but also deeply mysterious. And I will never learn to see well to really make sense of things on my own. I need teachers, mature, wise sets of eyes to explain this world. But here's the catch. When a baby is born physically, there are plenty of available teachers. At least in an ideal situation, we got parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, friends, church members who can help them make sense of the world. But all of us, when it comes to being born spiritually, all of us are young children. I suppose it's possible that part of why you're here is because you appreciate having me as a guy. But at most, I'm about 2 years old, spiritually speaking. And while the wisdom of toddlers may be impressive to infants, a world based upon 2-year-olds explaining things to 0-year-olds is not a world that's going to go with. When it comes to seeing spiritually, in the entire history of the human race, there has been one adult. One woman is set apart. One person who can actually make sense of this. And the way that Jesus makes himself available to us as a teacher, as a guide, as someone who helps us learn to see is through his Spirit. And that's what's going on in our passage today. Paul, in Romans 8, he's trying to describe what it's like to live as a Christian. And in this middle section, he's acknowledging it ain't easy. We cannot all of a sudden make sense of everything around us. We are only just barely beginning to see. And we only begin to see rightly by the Spirit. Only by the Spirit of Jesus do we begin to see the suffering around us. Only by the Spirit of Jesus do we begin to see the hope before us. And only by the Spirit of Jesus do we begin to see the harmony of God within us. So, by the Spirit of Jesus, we begin to see the suffering around us. Please don't hear me saying that only Christians can perceive the suffering in the world. Of course, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that only by the Spirit of Jesus can we begin to spiritually see suffering around us. Only by the Spirit of Jesus do we begin to get Jesus' perspective on the suffering around us. Paul begins the passage by saying, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time," which didn't mean the sufferings of 58 AD or whatever Paul wrote the letter to Romans, but the sufferings of this age of the earth, between humans rebelling against God and introducing sin into the world, and God returning to earth and making all things right. The sufferings of this age. All of them. So, last participation. What are some of the sufferings of this present time?
Global warming.
Homelessness. Mental illness. The people directly affected, those in the blast radius. Political unrest. Treating each other horribly verbally or fire the government or the community. The list can go on and on and on. Now, confess to not being well today. Thank you. And we submit. Well, it's not a word that should call. By the Spirit of Jesus, we begin to see these sufferings and many others from this perspective, which means two things. First, we do not yet understand what we consider. Second, we do not yet solve. So first, when it comes to beginning to see the suffering around us, we do not yet understand what we consider. Paul says in verse 20 that the creation was subjected to futility. This word futility, it means smoke or vapor. Right? If you read the book of Ecclesiastes, it's the same word that the author of Ecclesiastes uses when he says vanity of vanities. And the idea, I think, of an extremely dense fog, you know, like often happens here in the morning, where you can, I can see from me to Peter quite well, and Frank in the back would be totally invisible. That's the picture here, is it just can't see very far. You can't make sense of anything that's not right in front of your face. Paul said the whole creation is subjected to this. It doesn't just occur on misty mornings in the Lake of Valleys, everywhere, all of the time right now. And the idea is that as we begin to see, we are in this age profoundly nearsighted. We can see a little bit of the sufferings around us, but when it comes to the deep hows and whys, how did this happen in the world? How do we stop it from happening again? Why would God ever let something like that happen? Those answers are hidden in God. We do not understand. Then, keep in mind, if something's covered in fog, it's still there. It's just that we can't see. We did not understand being subject to utility. It is the temporary. The day is coming and the fog will be burned away. We will understand. We do not yet understand the hows and whys of the suffering around us, but we do consider them by the Spirit of God. Well, the passage begins, Paul says, well, I consider the sufferings of this present time. That the word consider is this, it's an almost scientific word for meticulously collecting data, examining and analyzing and trying to make sense of it. See, the idea here is that we don't understand, but we seek. Don't look at homelessness and say, well, we can't figure out how to stop it. Why not? We let it be. So, hold up. How am I going to go that? We don't look at it and go, well, I want it to fit into my preferred explanation. I want it to be comprehensible. So, let me shrink that suffering down. So it fits in a box. This is very much like staring at the sun. It hurts. You don't end up seeing it. And yet, part of beginning to see the suffering around us from the perspective of Jesus is to keep looking. Because Jesus is not the God who looks away. The Spirit of Jesus, we do not yet understand the suffering around us, but we still consider it. And by the Spirit of Jesus, we do not yet solve the suffering around us, but we do grow. We do not yet solve. Paul says in verse 19, the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing, the unveiling of the sons of God. Because the sons of God, we're going to spend most of next week, Lord willing, on this. I'm not going to go all the way into the weeds, but that's future you. If you believe in Jesus, he is making you into a son of God, meaning someone who shares in his family inheritance and joins in his work of healing the world. There is a day coming when we will be a part of solving the suffering around us. And so if you have that instinct in you, when you see a person held on the street by mental illness, to do something, to fix the problem, that is a right instinct. And the day is coming for the fulfillment of that instinct. The day is not that day. We are not yet part of the solution to the suffering around us. Now, I, to my ears, that sounds like quietism, an excuse to just shut the doors to the misery around us and mind our own business. But Paul doesn't say we do not yet solve the suffering around us, so you're off the boat. He says, we do not get solved, but we groan. So that the creation is groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now, verse 22 and then 23. And not only the creation, but we ourselves have the first fruits of the Spirit. By the Spirit of Jesus, we're beginning to see. We ourselves groan inwardly. And that inwardly doesn't mean private. It's not like the sort of stereotypical church person who's all torn to shreds on the inside, who puts on makeup and a smile and their best clothes so that they can rejoice outwardly. That's not it at all. He's groaning in the deepest depths of the being. Paul's talking about compassion. Seeing the groaning, the suffering around us and saying, that won't happen for love. I won't be indifferent to that suffering. I will share it. I can't fix it. I can't make the problem go away. But I join in the sorrow. The early church, you know, started in the Roman world. By the time the church is born, the Roman society, especially the middle and upper classes, had reached the conclusion that once you have a suitable heir in your family, other children would just depress. It just caused problems. And so it had become acceptable, even common practice. You had extra children, or even girls at all, to expose them, to leave them out in the background. The early church sees this, and they start by the Spirit to perceive the suffering around them. So everyone else closed their eyes and ears to the suffering of those babies. Church's response is they couldn't solve the problem. They couldn't change the culture from the top down, but they groaned in their depths. So those children won't suffer anymore. We'll be the ones checking the babies, collecting the babies, sharing in their suffering, and raising them in our lives. Groaning inwardly is the opposite of quiet. It's just joined to the humility that we can't fix this all. Even so, as people who are able to see by the Spirit of Jesus, Jesus who came to earth the first time and did not fix it, did not solve all the world problems, but groaned along with everyone who suffered. Jesus didn't feed everyone credits in life, but he did go. Beginning to see the suffering around us by His Spirit, we also can understand suffering. But neither do we get to be considered. That's what it is, just to begin to see the suffering around us and the two names to work and that it's made Jesus. Like little children, being taught slowly, we begin to see. So by the Spirit of Jesus, we begin to see the suffering around us, and by the Spirit of Jesus, we begin to see the hope before us. And the paragraph that Patty read for us ends with verses 24 and 25, "For in this hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what they see, but if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience." And the passage begins, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing to the glory that is to be revealed to us." Paul is speaking of a future hope, of something you can only catch the faintest glimpses of right now. My littlest, my 4-year-old. He looks to his future and he sees trucks, operating trucks all the time. He has no grasp of what that entails, of what it would look like to drive a truck for a living or be a firefighter. Right? He doesn't understand what he's hoping for. He just has a glimpse. That's us. And the Spirit is just barely begin to see the hope that is set. And you notice it's in the future. when Paul compares the suffering right now to what's good in the world right now, he doesn't say that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing to the glory we have. If you look around the creation, see all the suffering around you, and then you keep looking, you go, I don't see any good that makes that suffering good. You're seeing right. That good does not exist. If you look around at this creation and all the suffering around you, and you just get annoyed at people and say, it's all fine because it's all working out right now. You're right. Jesus does too. There is no good in the world at this moment that is worth all the misery we are experiencing at this moment. For the promise of the world God is creating is not what we have good now is more than equal to the suffering of people. This promise is that it will be so much more than equal. But this is not even worth comparing. He uses the imagery of labor, childbirth. And the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And that's exactly the right image. In the midst of childbirth, you cannot see anything that makes the contraction work. It is not a fair deal in the present. There's this cyclical, escalating misery that for long stretches of time appears to be going down. And then, that very suffering leads to a baby. And then all of a sudden, the pains of childbirth are not worth comparing to the joy of having a child. Lots and lots and lots of honest women in the middle of labor say, you know what? I want out. This is not worth it. And they're no the worse off for doing so. But you have to look far and wide to find a mother who says, let me get this kid that I have now back just to embrace the experience of it. That's the promise that God is making us on a creation-wide scale. That we and the whole world are right now groaning in the pains of childbirth, and we look around and go, there's nothing here that makes this worth it. We're right. But somehow, mysteriously, in a fall, that very suffering is producing such a glory as to be beyond. And Paul says it's not just that you individually are going through suffering that will somehow cleanse and glorify you, although that's true. And again, we'll talk about that at length next week, or at least I intend to do so. Paul says the whole world is going through it. That the creation itself, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its own bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. That the entire world is being born anew, remade into something incomprehensibly glorious. That's where this is headed. The passage that we read at Christmas time in Isaiah, the wolf will lie down with the lamb, and the bear and the calf will eat together, and the child will play over the adder's den, and a little child shall be that. That's where this is headed. The whole world being made whole. The hope that we can't see yet, but that we catch glimpses of, that by the Spirit of Jesus we're beginning to see, is not just a hope of you living forever. It's not just a hope of you living forever free from sin. It's not just a hope of you living forever free from sin and together with Jesus. Hope of the whole world being somehow famine being reversed into a planet that produces only feasting. Disease being undone into bacteria and viruses and whatever else that produce only health and flourishing. Of mental illness being unmade to the point that what we would consider sanity and mental health is too far below the baseline. We don't need to see the whole universe is caught up in the pains of childhood. It is by the Spirit of Jesus, who himself experienced every unspeakable awfulness that our sin and creation's corruption inspired him, then rose from the grave by the Spirit of that Jesus who began to see the hope. By the Spirit of Jesus, we begin to see the suffering around us. By the Spirit of Jesus, we begin to see the hope before us. And by the Spirit of Jesus, we begin to see the harmony of God within us, the peace, the shalom, but it is finally going to be well within us. This is verses 26 and 27. I'm breaking the rules and going outside of those rules. Paul says, as we hope for this, what we do not see, and we wait for it with patience, likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. In the same way, just as we share in the sorrow and suffering around us, the Spirit shares in ours. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know how to pray for what to pray for as we ought. Is that not one of the more encouraging verses in the New Testament? That even the Apostle Paul didn't really know what to pray sometimes. We do not know what to pray for as we ought, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. The idea here is you're a little child. That's what weakness is talking about. It's brand new. Compared to the eternity that you're going to live, none of us have even actually made it to 2 years old, spiritually speaking. You can't imagine. And you were supposed to grow up to become the measure of the stature of fullness of Christ. So how would you ever know what to ask for? What to pray for? I don't know, kids, they don't ask me, hey, have you given me whatever I need to grow up into a mature, godly person? But I say, how about snack? Give me a coloring book. And that's just because they're small. They can't imagine what they really need. And the beauty of this is that God doesn't look at us and say, I'm not subject to your weakness. I don't want to deal with that. Jesus looks at us and says, no, you will not come to me. I will come share in your weakness. I'll be the God of grace for you. So the Spirit of Jesus fills us, not to yell at us for seeing, but to see on our behalf, to hope on our behalf, to pray on our behalf, on our behalf. And this act of the Spirit living within us and interceding for us, it is an act of all of God, the Father and the Son and the Spirit. This is why Paul puts in verse 27. And he who searches hearts, that's the Father, God the Father, knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. And Paul, that language is sort of deliberately awkward and redundant to get you to see that the persons of the eternal God are agreeing together in their prayers, in their groaning alongside. There is what Dallas Willard calls a divine conspiracy on your behalf, on the whole creation's behalf. Just as with a little baby, right? We have brand new babies in the congregation, Nathan Terry and Carly Velasco, all sorts of people beyond those little ones' comprehension, are conspiring together, using all of their wisdom and strength to lead those little ones to flourish in ways that they can begin to imagine. So the Father, the Son, and the Spirit harmony together, conspire with all of their infinite wisdom and endless strength on your back to give you everything you need to flourish and grow up into Christ. And by the Spirit of Jesus living within you, you begin to see just these barest places of God's conspiracy, of God growing alongside, of God giving you whatever you need to become the key all these days. And not just you, not just me, the whole universe. We get to be little children in this lifetime. Babies in this new creation of ours. And we will spend our whole lifetime just beginning to see by the Spirit of Jesus. You're not going to reach your 80s and all of a sudden all of these things. But you will reach your 8,000s. And then it will all make sense. Wait for it with patience. Paul says, wait for hope. Does this seem where it will be more? It seems like it's taking forever. But forever is when we get to see. I have this vivid memory of the last day of third grade and riding the bus home to our neighborhood and my friend down the street, Oliver Long, getting off the bus in front of me. And Oliver is such fifth grade, he's one of the middle school district. And I remember walking home to my house. And the whole time thinking, I have never going to make it. That is just so far away. Never going to make it. I'm going to be in elementary school for the rest of my life. But the word Paul uses for patience, it means long suffering. This lifetime is going to feel like that. On and on and on. One attraction after another. Why is it the same thing? Why is it the same thing? Holy moly. It's just like doing it. It's just like doing it. He is the God who came into creation in order to make the whole thing be one. It's coming back. By the Spirit of Jesus, to spend this life, this element, to begin to see. Let's pray. Father, thank you for seeing God who doesn't leave us for our own devices. Listen. Dear friends, the suffering we endure and the suffering we inflict. The name of God shares in our burdens. The name of God of compassion. Thank you for pouring out your Spirit upon us to keep us company. We confess that we're like little children that if for an instant we can't see what your Spirit is up to, we tend to assume it's gone forever. Help us to make sense of the world as you see it. Just to trust that you are, as you have promised to be, always with us. Help us to hope whom he cannot see. Tell the story of Easter.